Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
If all my bets were safe, there just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian, presented by DraftKings, America's top-rated sportsbook app. We are talking college football coming up. We're going to have three guests. Chuck Edel went 2-0 last weekend with his picks. Matt Eumanns of Vegas Stats and Information, VSiN. He'll break down a couple conference championship games and some other games that have caught his eye. And differing opinions. So Matt's on a couple sides, and Brad Edwards is going to join us. We know him from FPI and our analytics division. You see him on Daily Wager and hear him on College Game Day on ESPN Radio a bunch. He has some stats and some opinions that would be contrasting couple picks. So that'll be fun to get different opinions there. So we'll wrap things up with Brad and also talk about the Heisman Trophy race. Last week, we hope you listened, hope you acted. Mac Jones was minus 110. Now he's over $2 as a favorite, but it's still up in the air. In previous years, it's kind of been predetermined at this point, but that's not the case this weekend. The conference title games will have a significant impact on voters, over 900 voters scattered throughout the country, so that's an element as well. So I'll discuss that with Brad. He always has good insight. He himself is a voter as well. And Christina, I'm a little disappointed. We got the new mic. We taped the UFC pod and no one's chiming in thanking me for the audio improved.
Well, then let me be the first to say, I think that the new microphone sounds awesome.
Good, good. No, I'm excited. You were obviously very important in that process. So thank you for orchestrating that on your end. And I like my new toy and I don't have this craziness and the hollow sound, but that's okay. All the listeners were very understanding and they have been in all platforms and not just ESPN, but other networks as well. I mean, it's a new era with this COVID period. So thanks to everyone for their patience, but we should be all set moving forward. So coming up, like I said, we'll discuss the conference title games, the Heisman race. Matt's got a really interesting take on some of the line movement of these conference title games. He knows his sides, but he's going to wait for some key numbers to pop up. Last week I was big on Hawaii. We touched on that. I went 6-2 in the column though. So the Hawaii full game side did not get there for me. But a couple things I'm eyeing is Alabama team total over, Oregon team total over. I think this Ducks team can get to USC's defense. We'll see how much the Trojans bring it because they kind of know they're not in the playoff discussion, even though they are undefeated and playing for a conference title. So I think Oregon going to be able to be just fine against that defense, be able to carve them up, especially their running backs out of the backfield. And Coastal, I do like. We're going to talk about that game with Brad Edwards. So make sure you check in on the column. I've had a very fortunate season. So that gets posted on Thursday, ESPN.com's chalk section will be the final place for yours truly. But let's get to the discussions.
So let's get to it. But before we do that, I want to remind everyone of another ESPN podcast, Stanford Steve and the Bear. Stanford Steve Coughlin and Chris the Bear Felica put their unique spin on the world of playing the odds in college football, horse racing, and more. Be sure to download and subscribe to Stanford Steve and the Bear, as well as Behind the Bets with Doug Kazarian on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Go pick me out a winner, Bobby.
I have very few rules in life, but if you go 2-0, you get to lead us off. Chuck Edel, back for more. How are you, sir?
Hey, doing good, Doug. How you doing?
Doing well. Appreciated the easy winners. I was texting you in third quarter, I believe, in each game, sometimes at halftime. So well done there. Let's keep it rolling. And I want to start with the Cincinnati game. So much has been made of where they are in the college football playoff rankings, despite an undefeated record and, you know, what needs to maybe happen this weekend. And some would think that they need some style points to more than cover this 14.5 point spread, but you're going to the total and something that doesn't necessarily overlap with the style points narrative.
Yeah, no, exactly. Listen, this is, this Tulsa defense is probably one of the better defenses Cincinnati has played this year. So of course, Cincy would like to get some style points there, but it's not going to be easy. This is going to be a real tough physical game. You know, you look at Cincinnati and you see, wow, this Cincinnati team averages 40.9 points a game. But Doug, look at the teams that Cincinnati has played. They played the 117th defense in the country, Central Florida, 103rd East Carolina, 70 Houston, 104 Memphis, 77 SMU, 95 South Florida. This Cincinnati team has not really gone up against top defenses all year. The best defense that Cincinnati played this year was Army. That was earlier in the year, and the final score of that game was 24-10. So now they're going to, you know, they're going to have to step it up a notch against the Tulsa defense, who's only given up 19.9 points a game, 4.51 yards per play. They're very good against the run, only giving up 3.51 yards per carry. So a solid defense. And, you know, they held some good teams down this year. Tulsa against Oklahoma State held them to 16 points. The high-powered Central Florida offense, they actually beat Central Florida, held them to 26 points. They held SMU to 24. So, you know, their defense, I think, could keep them in this game. The problem with Tulsa is on the offense, and another very overrated offense. You know, they played a similar schedule like Cincinnati played. They've gone up against some weak defenses, and they average a lot less. They're only averaging 27.7 points a game. Now, you know, now they're really going up. One thing Cincinnati has is a solid defense. By far, this is their best defense they're going to play this year. Cincinnati, all season, only allowing 15 points a game. And they've played some good offenses. The only 4.25 yards per play they're giving up. And Cincinnati doesn't care to play fast. I think they average about 68 plays a game, which isn't low, you know, if you look at go through all the teams, Doug, but considering their time of possession, because their defense gets so many three and outs, 68 plays a game really is not that much. It's a little bit on the low side if you enter the time of possession here. So the key in this game is going to be the Tulsa defense. We know Tulsa is going to struggle against that Cincinnati defense. I mean, since he held some good offenses, they held Memphis to 10, SMU 13, Houston to 10. So this looks like a grinded out game. Sure, since he would like to run it up if they could, but I don't think Tulsa is going to let him. And I think Tulsa has a real tough time scoring against Cincinnati. I do like the game to go under.
Yeah, the Bearcats defense certainly not discussed enough, but we have a low total here. So in the around the 45.5, 46.5 out there. So it is interesting, given where we are with football in 2020, to have a college football total this low. But you certainly laid out reasons for it.
Yeah, I mean, I have to ask you to say though. I mean, you know, the average person just looks up how many teams, you know, how many points do these teams score? You know, Cincinnati's averaging 41. Tulsa's about like 28 points a game. And you look at the total, you know, 45.5. I mean, you got to really dig into some of these games. And I think this is a little bit of an under-the-radar total here. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Let's go to another game. And you've gone to the well a couple times with Florida State and overs, and you're going back again.
Yeah, hey, if it's not broke, I guess don't try to fix it, right? We had the over last week, the Florida State-Duke game. And that went over pretty nicely. Now they're going to play Wake Forest, who actually has statistically a much better offense than Duke. Wake Forest playing pretty fast this year. They're averaging over 75 plays a game. FSU's averaging over 71 plays a game. So there's going to be a little bit of speed to both offenses here. And FSU has gone up against some really solid defenses. Another thing that we went over. You know, they played Miami of Florida, Notre Dame, Pitt, Louisville. They've gone up against some good defenses. But, now they're starting to, you know, get a little easier schedule. They're also getting healthy, Doug. Their offensive line last week returned. Also, their quarterback, Jordan Travis, returned last week. And they put up 56 on Duke. This Florida State offense has really shown improvement throughout the season, even though you look at certain games, maybe statistically it doesn't look that way. But they are improving. Their problem, again, has been their defense. So they're scoring fine, but their defense has given up 36 points a game. Even, you know, last week they put up 56 on Duke, but they still let up 35 points. And, their offense put up 522 yards. Now their defense has to try to stop a Wake Forest team who's really playing well, 37 points a game, 5.77 yards per play. And, two games ago, if you remember this one, Wake Forest went up against North Carolina. Wake Forest put up 606 yards of offense in that game. Now, unfortunately for them, their defense isn't too good, which helps us here. Their defense gave up 742 yards in that game to North Carolina. So just like we talked about Florida State with their offense playing well and their defense being the problem, really, if you look at this Wake Forest team, Doug, it's the same situation. Their Wake Forest's defense has been a problem. They're giving up 31.6 points a game. They're giving up over 6 yards per play. Last week, they gave up 45 to Louisville, 453 yards. That's a team who averages only about 29 points a game. So they went way over their normal, their scoring average. But this game, to me, looks very similar to the Duke-Florida State game last week, except Wake actually, in my opinion, a better offense than Duke. So the total's a little higher as well, but I do like it to go over the total.
Yeah, no, look, it's and sometimes it's just that high for a reason, right? I think I've shared this before. Someone told me a long time ago for an NFL card, take the highest over-under on the board for that weekend, go over, take the lowest, and go under. I mean, they're like, usually that's a rule of thumb that works. I never looked at it. I never checked it out to see if it does. But the main sort of takeaway is that it's that low, or in this case, that high for a reason. So let's hope for points. Middle of December, end of the season. Why not? Light it up. Yeah, light up the scoreboard.
Most likely both teams' last game. And, let them go out, have some fun, throw the ball all over the place.
Exactly. All right, my man. Hey, good stuff as always, Chuck. Really appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks, Doug. Have a good week.
It's not even so much me as it's Ronick. He's good.
Oh, is that right?
Back for more is a longtime contributor here on the Behind the Bets podcast. Matt Eumanns, how are you, my man?
You know, I'm doing okay, and hopefully win some games this week and not take any bad beats. I watched SVP's bad beats on, I think it was Monday night, and I felt like I had every game. I was on the wrong side of every one of those bad beats, so that's okay. It was a combination last week. It's always a combination of bad bets and bad beats. You know, when you have a rough weekend, it's not just all bad beats. I know a lot of bettors like to think that way, but you have to look at it honestly. But no, I think the UCLA game last week was the toughest one for me to take. UCLA plus 3.5, and we know how that turned out. That's probably why I'm not going to – it's a big reason why I'm not going to be on the Pac-12 championship game this week.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out why Clay Helton played it that way, but he did. So it's always a head-scratching decision by Clay Helton as a Trojan fan many, many years. Okay, let's talk about the ACC title game. This line, the advanced line was 7, got bet up to 10.5 now. Obviously, we know the narrative. Trevor Lawrence is in this time as opposed to the loss at South Bend that went to overtime. Why do you like the dog here?
You know what? Almost everyone expects Clemson to win the game, and I do too. You know, it's not going to be surprising at all if Clemson wins this game in the ACC, gets 2 of the 4 teams in the playoff. Brian Kelly, I think, has done a really good job with this team, plus Clark Lea with the defense. Clark Lea is taking the Vandy job, but that's not going to be a distraction here. Brian Kelly, 4-1 in his last 5 as a dog. That includes the first meeting against Clemson when the number was 5.5. There's a little inflation in this line. Obviously, some books opened 7.5 last week. Now it's 10.5. I have not bet this yet because I want to see. I've talked to several bookmakers who say the favorites will get bet up this week. All of the favorites, essentially, in the championship games. So I want to grab a better number with Notre Dame if it's out there. I know the 11 was out there for a while. It's gone. It might come back. If the 11 comes back, I'll take Notre Dame. If not, I'll just grab the 10.5. But you don't have to rush to grab 10.5 when 11 might come back. The thing about – I think Notre Dame is better and more physical on both lines, offensive line and defensive line. Notre Dame can stop the run, obviously. Clemson's offensive line has got a couple of issues. And, you know, in the first meeting, Travis Etienne had 28 yards on 18 carries. That's not going to be the case this time, obviously. He's going to get on track. He'll have a better game. Trevor Lawrence is going to make a difference. But, hey, the first time around, DJ, the freshman, passed for 439 yards and 2 touchdowns. You know, he was not the reason the Tigers came up short in that game. Clemson's defense allowed 518 total yards. Obviously, the defense is healthier this time. It's a revenge spot. There are a lot of things working in Clemson's favor. I think that Trevor Lawrence might not be as sharp as we expect him to be. He's come back in the past 2 games, completed 64 58% of his passes, 598 yards. And Clemson outscored Pitt and Virginia Tech by a combined 97-27. That's great, but Lawrence has basically played two games in the past month. Meanwhile, Ian Book and the Irish are battle-tested. They played important games basically, what would you say, six of the past 8 weeks. So,
yeah,
you know, it's just a case of
it's a lot of points.
The line being a little bit too high. I think this Notre Dame defense is legit. Ian Book has played better the second half of the year. Kyren Williams, a freshman running back, has really become a star. He had 23 carries, 140 yards, and that 65-yard TD run in the first minute of the first meeting. Book's receivers have really developed, I think, as the season has gone on. And this Notre Dame team is not outclassed like the Irish teams were when they ran up against Bama, when they ran up against Clemson in playoff games in the past. That's, you know, you got kind of have to get that out of your mind, because this Notre Dame team can compete and it's legit. I fully expect Clemson to win the game, but I think Clemson wins by 4, 7, 10, whatever, something like that. So I'm looking for 11, Doug. Put me down for Notre Dame plus 11, but if that number never comes back, I will take the 10.5.
You know, you said it. That's my big thing with this Notre Dame team. This is not the Manti Te'o Notre Dame Fighting Irish. This team belongs in the discussion and in the race for the national championship. I think it's Alabama on a separate tier right now, but Notre Dame will not be outclassed. And that's the right word. You nailed it in terms of outclassed. So I agree with you. I think they do keep it close. I'm looking at the over, but it's a lot of points. So I haven't bit yet. It's come down a little bit. It's down to 60. It was 61.5, I believe, a couple of days ago. So that's something I'm keeping an eye on. I always like to talk Big Ten with you. It's one of the conferences you follow the most closely. And the Big Ten title game's interesting here because the Buckeyes, you know, let's face it, gifted an opportunity to play in the Big Ten championship game. And Northwestern was a team that you and I backed a lot early in the season. And this is a big number, nearly three touchdowns, but the Buckeyes have the potential to lay it on, may need the style points. How are you approaching this?
Yeah, here's another case of a team that might not be that sharp because of inactivity. Ohio State's having COVID issues within the program, obviously. I don't criticize the Big Ten for putting the Buckeyes in the championship game. Hey, the ACC made a smart business decision. Let's just put Clemson and Notre Dame in the championship game. Don't make them play last week. That's the best thing for the teams, best thing for the conference. This is 2020. You can change the rules on the fly, right? Politicians do it every week. So the Big Ten made a smart move. Let's just put Northwestern against Ohio State in a championship game. And it's in the best interest of Ohio State in the conference. Here's the thing. Buckeyes have played two games in the past 6 weeks. Ryan Day said this week, you know, we're still trying to figure out what we are as a team, how good we are as a team. And it's kind of an interesting quote because we're sitting here in the middle of December. Ohio State's played five games all season. A couple of those games were against extremely weak opponents. So how many times has this team really been tested? I question how good Ohio State is. I don't think it's as good as last year's team that should have beat Clemson in the playoff. Certainly not as good as that Zeke Elliott team, but it's being treated the same way with this number. One book has gone to 21 here. And what I'm trying to get on this game, I want Northwestern plus 21.5. And I think that's going to pop up because a couple of bookmakers told me, hey, people just love to bet Ohio State. And yeah, they love to bet favorites in these games. So I think we're going to see some line inflation here. You've got a Northwestern defense that allows 14.6 points a game. Yes, the Purple Cats have not been facing offenses like the Buckeyes every week. I get it. So they're going to allow more than that. Justin Fields looked bad against one defense this year, and that was Indiana. He got picked off three times. Really, that's the only time we've seen Fields look a little sloppy since he's been at Ohio State. Northwestern and Indiana have similar defenses. Northwestern D has picked off 12 passes in seven games, and I think they can get enough pressure on the passer, contain the, you know, hold the edge enough to prevent Fields from running wild here. And, you know, what you need when you're taking an underdog like this, you need the defense to step up. Northwestern's got the biggest the best defense in the Big Ten, and the defense needs to force a turnover to kind of win the field position battle. And then you have to get smart, efficient play from the quarterback, and that's what Peyton Ramsey does. He's not a star. His numbers are not that impressive. But Peyton Ramsey's a smart quarterback who makes the right play more often than not. And Pat Fitzgerald's going to have this team ready. I really think this game's going to be a lot more competitive than people think. I might be dead wrong and look like a fool for that statement, but that's okay. I think Northwestern's got a real shot to put a scare into Ohio State here. Maybe the game gets away late. Northwestern 13-3 against the spread as a road dog in the past 4 years. This team really does excel in the underdog role, and this team plays well away from home. This game's in Indianapolis. Again, I have not bet this yet. I'm waiting for the number to hit 21.5. I've had a couple bookmakers tell me they're pretty sure that's going to happen, so put me down for that. If not, I'll take the 21, and I, like I said, I see a book or two out there right now with 21.
Makes perfect sense, and there could be a point where pressure mounts, right? We learned last weekend a school like Alabama, which is used to the look-ahead spot and all the dangers that come with that, handle it fine because they have experience doing that. Florida had no experience, and we saw what happened. So this could be just pressure, and obviously we know Fields and some of these guys have handled it, but the entire team hasn't. And he played great against Michigan State with the bad snaps and everything, handled all those, but there were a lot of third and longs and stuff like that, and you're not going to be able to be as successful against Northwestern if you're in that situation. So I certainly understand where you're coming from there.
Yeah, one more thing, Doug. You're going to hear people talk about style points this week. Ohio State needs style points. That's BS. Ohio State just needs to win, right? It's just like Notre Dame just needs to lose, not by 5 touchdowns. Notre Dame and a competitive loss is in the playoff. Ohio State with any sort of win is in the playoff. So don't listen to the style points BS.
Okay. All right, because that's a narrative I often reference. So that's fair enough. Let's get out of the conference title game section and go to Stanford, because this is a team I was reluctant to back last week because of the spot. It was a third straight road game against Oregon State. I was also keeping an eye on Jefferson's status for the Beavers, and they pushed. It was kind of a crazy fourth quarter and all that good stuff. I like them here, and I know you're on the Cardinal here, but let's start with the concern of like another straight road trip, because they're traveling to Pasadena now.
Yeah, David Shaw said, you know, his team deserves a lot of credit for, quote, overcoming all kinds of odds, unquote, while playing most of the season on the road. And it's been a tough situation, but I think Stanford has the team has kind of developed that road warrior mentality. And I like that a little bit. I'm not going to say it's too much of a negative. And another thing you have to consider here is Stanford is not going to play in a bowl game. So this is it. And these players are going to be fully focused on this last game against USC. And I kind of like that.
UCLA.
Last game against UCLA. I still got USC on my mind after last week's game. Hey, Stanford had a 10-game winning streak in this series before last season's loss. And David Shaw had dominated the Bruins. Obviously, UCLA turned the tables big time last year. And I've kind of come to like this UCLA team, which is – strange, because after week one, they looked pathetic in that loss to Colorado. It turns out the Buffaloes are not that bad. And UCLA kind of adapted that Chip Kelly offensive mentality where they could establish the run and dictate games. And Dorian Thompson-Robinson, back at quarterback, has been a positive. He was 30 for 36 against USC, 364 yards, 4 touchdowns. He also rushed for 50 yards. As DTR always does, he threw a couple of costly interceptions too. So he's going to turn the ball over. But Dimitri Felton and Britton Brown have been great in the backfield for UCLA. Like I said, that's a big reason I liked that team last week, is that I thought UCLA was going to be able to run the ball. I knew the Bruins were going to be able to move the ball against USC. I was just hoping their defense would hold up, and it did for 59 minutes and 30 seconds. Stanford's won 3 in a row. All narrow wins, 24-23 at Cal, 31-26 at Washington. I was on Stanford that week, and 27-24 last week. Davis Mills passed for 292 last week. And I like this team a lot better with Mills at quarterback. UCLA is more talented and a deserving favorite. I just think this 7-point number is high. I'm not afraid of the situation here. I think you're going to get a really strong effort from Stanford. I thought the right number in this game was 4. I did not bet it yet, Doug, because once again, it's sitting on 7, and it might go to 7.5. And
it already is at some places. DraftKings is 7.5.
Right, yeah. A couple places that I can't bet at right now. I have 7.5, but yeah, I'm looking to grab 7.5 with the Cardinal.
And it's a Saturday night game, so you might have an opportunity, you know, as the day trickles on too, when some more parlays and teasers and money line parlays and all that stuff get involved as well. Couple other games I wanted to run by you. It's a sad day. Pour one out for Sam Boyd Stadium. The final game at Sam Boyd, the Silver Bowl, as it used to be called back in the day, now that the Big Al is here on the Strip. San Jose State and Boise State in the Mountain West Conference title game. The Spartans with an impressive second half to take down Nevada last week, I believe it was Friday night. And here they are, dogs to Boise State.
Yeah, you know, if you look at San Jose State statistically, you might think, well, how is this team 6-0? Is it smoke and mirrors?
I love this team. They're like,
yeah, I do too.
In Nevada, I loved all year. I was like trying to pick between my two favorite children last week. So I laid off the game, but they've covered every game we're pushed all season.
Yeah, I was on Nevada last week and I had +3, and Nevada was up 20-7 late in the first half. And Carson Strong was throwing into the end zone to go up 27-7 at the half, right? And it looked pretty good for the Wolfpack at that point. Jay Norvell sent out the kicker, best kicker in the conference. He shanked a short field goal, and it was all downhill from there. And then you had a 98-yard kickoff return for the Spartans to open the second half, and they outscored Nevada 23-0. Hey, that's a tough team. It's a resilient team. And San Jose is winning with – really a relentless running attack. I would say an attacking defense and just a tough mentality. And you have to give Brent Brennan a lot of credit. Like you said, this guy turned around a program in a hopeless situation with no fan support, no financial resources. It's really an amazing story if you think about how bad San Jose State was. Anyway, this game in Vegas at Sam Boyd Stadium, I'm not going to say it's the final game ever there, Doug. I know you like to say that. I've already heard that about 10 times. People said that last year when the UNLV played there. It's the last game ever. COVID changed a lot of things. You never know. Might be another game there.
That's fair.
After we find out about COVID-20 and next season's football season's thrown out of whack.
Don't go there.
Okay.
So you like the Spartans here?
Oh, the location, I think, is a little bit of an advantage for the Spartans at Sam Boyd. The first time these teams are going to play, the game got canceled because of COVID. Broncos were 11-point favorites. That game was November 28th. I think the Fox TV crew was on site, and the game got called like at the last minute, maybe the night before or that morning. So the line adjusted to 6.5. I don't see a ton of value and taking 6.5 with San Jose State. I'd like to get 7. I think you might see a 7 pop up again. But Nick Starkel did throw for 306 and 2 TDs. He played better than Carson Strong last week. San Jose outgained the Wolfpack 506 to 398. And if you watch Boise, it was a snowy night in Laramie, Wyoming. They held the Broncos held the Cowboys 146 total yards. They did just enough to grind out that 17-9 win. Hank Bachmeier's back, fourth consecutive start. He was not obviously available after he got knocked out in that embarrassing loss to BYU. I think that game might have been a lot different if not for Bachmeier. Excuse me, Bachmeier was not in that game. Jack Sears got knocked out early in the game, so they had to play the number 3 quarterback. I think that Boise game against BYU would have been a lot different. You know, it's tempting to go with the Cinderella story here and take the Spartans. I've got to get +7 if I'm going to bet it. But I'm not afraid to fade this Boise State team, Doug. The defense is strong. This could turn into be a defensive battle. I don't think it's going to be a shootout. Boise State just doesn't have the offensive playmakers and the big play ability that it has had offensively in the past. I think it's going to be a tight game, and I expect San Jose State to hang in it. But, like, again, I'm waiting for the best number on a lot of these games. If I can get 7, I'll probably take it with your San Jose State Spartans.
I would agree, though. The Broncos do not have the same firepower like they did in years past. One final game. I want to get your thoughts. LSU, impressive win a week ago. Hats off to them. Coach O rallied them, and a team that kind of looked like they had quit. A couple players already had, you know, going focusing on the draft, but they're home dogs here off that high. I don't know. I think it's a lot to ask Ole Miss to go in there and be a favorite, but I certainly understand it.
You know, what's funny is I talked to a couple of guys who are, I'll call them LSU insiders. One knows a member of the coaching staff, and another one just got connections within the program. And they both texted me last week and said, LSU shot. They had a terrible week of practice. They're down several players. They've got no shot. They're going to get destroyed at Florida. I didn't do anything with that information because, you know me, I hate to bet big favorites. And I was a little bit concerned that if Florida got up in the game, let's say 31-7 or 34-7, that they would just let off the gas. You got to look – it's you're going to be looking forward to Alabama in the SEC championship game, right? And that's just natural. And you should pull some players at that point when you have a big lead to start preparing for the Tide. That's the only reason I didn't bet the game. I didn't have any idea LSU was going to play that well. Florida was going to be that unfocused, and that game was going to be an upset. So I'm not sure exactly what to make of LSU in this spot this week. I like Ole Miss a little bit. I think Ole Miss's offense is probably going to be a little bit too much for LSU in this spot. And off a big road win like that, that the Tigers had in the Swamp, they could be a little bit flat this week, right? That kind of made their season.
Absolutely.
And maybe this Ole Miss game doesn't mean that much, and it means a hell of a lot more to Lane Kiffin and the Rebels. And that's why I'm leaning to Ole Miss here.
That's where I would lean. I think Kiffin can push the right buttons here. I don't think the distraction of Auburn and all that will be a factor. I don't think it's that significant. This Ole Miss, you know, defense stinks. So the freshman quarterbacks, look, I think Johnson's much better than Finley. I'm surprised he hasn't been starting getting more time. Just the dual threat component. I think he's just more accurate, more composed, being the son of a former NFL quarterback. So I like Johnson. I think he's got a huge upside for the Tigers moving forward. Ole Miss, I'm not in love with. I think it's a tough ask for LSU to win this game. I think the Rebels will be ready for this game. I actually think Mississippi State's a giant fade. I like Missouri a lot in that game against Mississippi State, Lane 2 in Starkville.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I was talking about this with Paul Stone, a guy you know well.
Sure.
Good, really sharp college football handicapper from Texas. Paul and I have each been big Mike Leach fans for a long time. I said, Paul, I think it might be coming to an end for Mike Leach. You know, players don't like this guy. He will throw players under the bus. He's got a big ego. For years, I've liked everything about Mike Leach, but I think his act has gotten kind of tired, and it's not going to work in the SEC. And it's not going to work at this stage of his career because he's not a likable guy to his players. We've seen a lot of players desert that program this year. So, and Missouri has been impressive. So I don't disagree with you there. I was looking at that game as well. I also have Tennessee, which is an ugly dog this week. Not too many people are going to want to bet, but I'm looking at that and Tennessee and Oregon State and possibly Rutgers in the Big Ten. So, you know, it's interesting. Usually by the time I talk with you this week, I have a few bets. I haven't made any bets this week. I'm so sick of this COVID stuff and everything that happens with postponements and cancellations and players being ruled out. And this week's a little bit different too, because I'm waiting on better numbers that I think we're going to see on a lot of these games by the weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you have your sides. You're just waiting
but
for the better
numbers. But I've got my sides, you're right.
Yeah, of course. So it's not like, oh, I don't have a bet yet. But you know a couple – you've done your homework. You know what sides and positions you're going to want to be on. And that's so important. We stress that enough, but we don't – excuse me. We stress it, but we don't stress it enough here just how important those numbers are. And we know about it in the NFL, I think, but – it's really when those key numbers, they do exist in college as well. Not as obviously the percentages aren't as high, 14% lands 3 in the NFL, but it's still still really critical, and especially the games you mentioned, those key numbers of 21 and 7 and things like that, and 11 even for that Clemson-Notre Dame game. Matt, appreciate the perspective as always. Fun to talk college hoops and college football. And we have like a full card on conference championship weekend, so it's kind of nice.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And bowl season actually is here this weekend. I've been writing up bowl games. I was up all night. I haven't had much sleep in the past 3 days, as you might be able to tell, but that's okay. Bowl season's coming up, and hopefully at this time next week, we're not talking about any bad beats from the weekend.
Yes, let's hope. Let's hope. Keep our fingers crossed. All right, my man. Thank you again.
You bet. Thanks.
Talk nerdy to me.
Yes, time to talk nerdy with Brad Edwards back here on the program. And Brad, things have certainly changed in the Heisman discussion. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing well. Yeah, I mean, it was a weird weekend in that only two teams that had Heisman candidates really played last weekend. But what they did in those games, I think, made a significant change to how we see the race.
Right. So right now, Mac Jones is the considerable favorite. Like you sort of touched on the last few times we've touched on this, this is where you thought it should be all along. Minus 210 for Mac Jones. Kyle Trask now moves to plus 350. And one thing I'm doing for the show today when we do it on TV is I want to put up a graphic of all these odds and then also the money lines of their teams playing this weekend, because I think that's such a big component of all this. Is why bet Kyle Trask at plus 350 when you can get better odds at him at Florida in the money line? Because I don't think he's going to win the Heisman, even if he plays great, if they don't win and they have a third loss this year. So things like that. I guess my question for you, and I want to start here, DeVonta Smith is the second favorite at plus 250. And do you think we are ready as a voting base to have a wide receiver win the Heisman?
Yeah, I think that's the big question is how much of the perception that we're exposed to nationally is reflective of the general Heisman voting base, you know, where, you know, I think this week the straw polls on both ESPN.com and The Athletic have DeVonta Smith as the leader. And while it's nice that the people who really pay attention to college football are seeing how good he is and they're willing to put a receiver at the top of their ballots, I don't know that that's necessarily the case for the majority of Heisman voters. I mean, we'll find out soon enough. But, you know, DeVonta Smith, interestingly, on Saturday had his worst statistical game of the season as a receiver. I mean, he was held to 20-something yards receiving, but the highlight you saw all day was the punt return touchdown, the first of his career. I mean, remember, he was never the punt returner on this team. Jaylen Waddle was. And after Waddle went down, Slade Bolden, who was kind of a backup slot receiver, Waddle's backup, became the punt returner. And when he got hurt a few weeks later, that was when DeVonta Smith started returning punts. So he hasn't even been doing it for that long. But we've seen in the past when a receiver has gotten a lot of Heisman momentum, it's been because he wasn't just a receiver. He was also productive in the return game. And I think that's why that was so big for DeVonta Smith, and everybody's aware of it. And there's no question he is one of the best players in college football. And the fact that that's being reflected in the odds is as it should be.
I get it. But the quarterback for an Alabama team that's the number one ranked team in the country, that's undefeated, has 27 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. So I get the buzz around Smith. And frankly, given how this season has played out with Ohio State having reduced games, Clemson with Trevor Lawrence missing a couple games, I understand the odds, and I think I agree with Smith being the second favorite. With that being said, I just don't see how he gets the votes to win the Heisman. Now, if you can't talk about certain things in your votes, that's fine. I don't think we're there yet. That's my point.
And we might not be. That is the point of this discussion, is that there are 900-something people who vote on the Heisman. And a whole lot of them, I mean, a high percentage don't cover college football nationally. They are the beat writer for the Casper, Wyoming Tribune or the Honolulu Advertiser, like places like that. And they're not watching every game Alabama plays, more than likely. So how much do they really consider DeVonta Smith the best player on Alabama's team? I don't know. I don't think anybody knows. If we just look at this coming Saturday and what we would probably need to see happen for Devontae Smith to clinch the Heisman? I mean, obviously he'd have to have a huge day. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 yards or higher as a receiver, you know, maybe also have another punt return, because the punt return is the one thing you can't connect to Mac Jones.
Correct.
But if he has a very high percentage of Alabama's receiving yards, which he has for a whole lot of games since Jalen Waddle went down. And then I think on top of it, he's going to need to have a couple of highlight reel touchdowns, you know, whether it's the deep ball where he gets behind everybody or whether it's the spectacular catch like he had against LSU at the end of the first half. He's going to need a few things like that. And if that happens, and I mean, let's say 75% of Mac Jones's passing yards are to Devontae Smith, then he has a chance. But if Mac Jones goes out there and throws for 400 yards and Devontae Smith has 150 of it, it's probably not going to be enough to get him in front of Jones.
What about the long shots? I mentioned the money lines of teams. Notre Dame, let's call it plus 300. Let's just say it's a 3-1 underdog. There's a little bit less, a little bit more, depending on the book. And then you have 15-1. I mean, we're talking about an undefeated Notre Dame team. If Ian Book has played well, better the last month, at least statistically, and I know he doesn't have the gaudy numbers like the other candidates do, but just what if he has a big game and Notre Dame finishes undefeated and it's the quarterback of a high-profile blue blood like Notre Dame? Is 15-1 within the realm of cashing?
I just don't hear his name being thrown out there at all. And look, one of the things that goes along with there being so many voters who aren't really invested nationally and they're just kind of, you know, localized, is that I think they're followers and they're going to look and see what everyone else is saying, and that's what they're going to react to. And so when you look at what the national conversation is or listen to it, Ian Book is not being mentioned. And so I think that's really going to affect his ability to, in one game, go all the way to the top. I think on the other side, you know, Trevor Lawrence, maybe if he has a huge win, especially, you know, keeping in mind that he didn't play in the first game against Notre Dame, which they lost. If he were to go out and throw for 400 yards against a really good defense, Clemson wins big and nobody really shines in the SEC championship game, I think that's more realistic, that Trevor Lawrence would be able to get into this mix and have a chance to win based on what happens this weekend, much more so than Ian Book and more so than Justin Fields. You know, I think Justin Fields has been hurt a lot more by the number of games Ohio State has played than the team has as far as its chance to get into the playoff. And given that Northwestern, as you see, what's weird here is that Northwestern is a very highly rated defense, statistically one of the best defenses in the country. And they're a team that's ranked in the top 15 by the selection committee. But as far as just national clout, I mean, are you going to look? We all know that not to go fighting Reese Davis is here, but we know what level of player Northwestern generally recruits. And if Justin Fields were to have a huge game against a bunch of three-star recruits, nobody nationally is going to be impressed with that. Probably not to the degree that they should be, given the way that Northwestern plays D. So I don't see there being enough meat on that bone there for Justin Fields to make a run. So I would say, outside of the guys playing in the SEC championship, Trevor Lawrence is the only one that I think would be worth taking a shot on.
Okay, Lawrence 14-1, Fields 40-1, as we look at some of the odds at William Hill. Of course, there's other prices around there if you want to shop around. I'm with you. I think Lawrence has a chance to remind people, oh, yeah, this guy's awesome. Oh, yeah, he is the number one overall pick for a reason. Because I think this gets lost a little bit when people talk about, well, DJ played well in that first game in South Bend, you know. It's not like he was a disaster. It was the defense that really had the issue. It's like, guys, fair. He played fine. But we're talking about the number one pick, maybe the best, you know, quarterback prospect coming out of the draft since maybe Elway, maybe better than Luck. We'll see. I just think we're forgetting some of that. So speaking of which, let's talk about that. Notre Dame, now a 10-point dog. The advanced line a week ago was Clemson 7. So this one's higher now. You know, you track this stuff. It's actually 10.5, excuse me. is Notre Dame, I think they belong. I actually think it's going to be a really high scoring game. I like the over 60 quite a bit. And I think Clemson's D is solid, but Notre Dame's offense is there. But I think the Tigers will score plenty. How do you feel? What stands out to you as you look at this game?
Yeah, that seems like a lot of points. And I get that Clemson was shorthanded the first time, and it still went to overtime. And so it's not just that they're getting Trevor Lawrence back. They're getting a few defensive starters back. And the cumulative effect of all of it, you know, could be that the pendulum swings and you know, a good bit the other way. And if that happens, sure, Clemson could win by double digits. But I just don't see Clemson as being that much better than Notre Dame. And I maybe this is because I don't think Clemson is as good as it was the previous couple of years. You know, that to me, there are a few areas. I mean, one is offensive line. I don't think they're special at all in the offensive line. And I think that's why Travis Etienne's numbers are way down. Defensive line, they're still good, but I don't think they're as good as they have been. I don't think they're quite as good as they have been in the secondary. And then at wideout, while they still have a lot of talent, there's no question that those guys are not at the level of T. Higgins and Justin Ross, who Lawrence was throwing to the previous 2 years. So to me, to lay double digits with Clemson in this spot against a team that is playing so well on both sides of the ball, as Notre Dame is, it seems like a reach. I mean, maybe this is more due to just the reputation of Clemson and how good they've been in big games for the last several years. That might be what it is. But just looking at this year alone, I just don't see them being 10 points better than Notre Dame.
I'm with you. Usually I like to lay the lumber in college football because I think the cream rises to the top, especially the back end of the season. Last time they all took the field, Clemson, Ohio State, Bama, all covered, right? Like a couple Saturdays ago.
Yeah.
And it's just because, you know, the long season, sometimes in the middle you get those flat spots, but at the end they see the light at the end of the tunnel. They know what's at stake. You see these teams kind of rise and just hammer some opponents. Now, these are conference title games, so that's different. But if I'm not making a good case for the Tigers, then it's probably Notre Dame's the right side. That's what I tell myself. Let's go to the SEC title game. We talked about the potential flat spots last week, and I'm very disappointed with myself for not recognizing the big difference between the Florida situation and the Alabama situation. The Tide, they've been there before. They know how to handle the pressure, the look ahead. Saban, very focused on do your job, stay in the moment kind of stuff. And Florida was just new to that, right? They were looking ahead to the SEC title game. They were maybe even distracted by the Heisman talk with Trask. They just don't have the experience. And then the letdown, obviously, no Pitts as well. And then LSU played great. So let's talk about the SEC title game. Line now 17, over under of 74.5. Bama has covered, what is it now, 7 straight for the first time in Saban's career, college, pro, you name it. They're a juggernaut. They are trucking opponents. And now that would be the only thing I would lay would be the 17. What do you think with Florida here coming off that loss?
Yeah, I would certainly lean toward Alabama if I was thinking about, doing something on this game. As far as a side, I would definitely be more toward Alabama. I think Alabama, and this is the thing that's scary, is that you probably have to go back to the Ole Miss game to find the only time this year that they have been forced to keep the pedal down for 4 quarters offensively. And look what happened. They scored 60-something points. And I think the same thing could happen in this game. You know, getting Kyle Pitts back, Florida is certainly capable of scoring with Alabama for a while. And even if they don't, you know, just knowing what their potential is offensively, if Alabama gets up by 28, you know, I think back to 2 years ago in the national semifinal against Oklahoma with Kyler Murray. Alabama got up 28-0. And then I think they kind of took their foot off the gas. And Oklahoma, they never got back within single digits, but they kind of got back into the game. And I think that's the type of thing that Saban would be worried about, where, you know what, guys, we got to just keep scoring, keep scoring, keep scoring, because you know Florida is going to be able to put some points up eventually. And so I think it all sets up for Alabama to score a lot. So I don't know what Alabama's team total is, but that to me would be the one that I'd probably have the most confidence in. I do like, the possibility of both teams scoring at least 30. I know that in itself is not going to get you over the total, Alabama would have to be in the 40s, but
yeah, they're about 45, I would guess, doing the math.
Okay, yeah. So I continue to be impressed by Alabama's defense each week with how much it's improved since that Ole Miss game, but they haven't played an offense like Florida or like Ole Miss since.
But my concern with the Gators, and the reason I'd rather lay the points, is they can't run the ball in short yardage. They do these like inside shovel pass fly sweep things. And if you can't run the ball, that's a big concern.
Right. So this is where I'm going with this is that,
okay, sorry.
First of all, I like Alabama's ability to score a lot of points more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Second, it would probably be the combination of points from both teams, because I think Florida eventually will score. Even if Alabama gets some stops early, gets out to a big lead, they'll finally break through. But, you know, we talked last week, one of the reasons, you know, not to jump on Florida first half against LSU is that they've been really slow out of the gate offensively. And they were again. I think they had, 17 at the half against LSU. So I think it's four straight games that they haven't had more than 17 in the first two quarters. And while, sure, even 17 is on pace for 34, that's still a lot of points for most teams. It's not the level they were playing at the start of the season. I really feel like this Florida offense peaked about a month ago. And so Alabama, like you said, if Florida is one-dimensional, can they do a better job of shutting them down, maybe keep them under 30? It's possible. Here's one thing I'll throw out, though. Florida leads the nation in receiving yards per game by running backs and tight ends combined. Okay. And we know they throw a lot of the wheel routes. Obviously they got Kyle Pitts at tight end. Alabama is fifth worst in the nation in receiving yards per game allowed to running backs and tight ends. So Alabama, while their corners are really good at locking down, you know, the top receivers on the other teams, their linebackers and safeties have not done a good job of covering those, you know, what are typically secondary targets, not secondary for Florida. And so that's where I think that Florida might be able to do some things and have success in areas that we haven't seen Alabama give up stuff in recent weeks, because Alabama has not been playing those types of offenses that are really good at throwing to the backs and the tight ends. So that's one other reason to think that Florida could score enough in order to, you know, to make this a really high scoring game.
Interesting. Very interesting stat there. Let's now go to the Big Ten championship game. Ohio State gifted an opportunity to play in it despite the requirements that were established prior to the season. Buckeyes, it's come down a little bit, less than three touchdown favorites over Northwestern, who I was a big fan of. Purple Cats were my team out of the gates for a few weeks, but I'm just not sold Ohio State is that great, because we've seen in years past they lay an egg after a few games, but I'm not about to fade them here either.
Right. You mentioned it earlier when you're talking about Clemson, about, you know, generally this time of year, this is when the big boys are going to really start to pick up steam and pour it on people. And I think that's what's going to happen in this game. You know, Northwestern is, I talked about it when I was mentioning Justin Fields with the Heisman. It athletically, it's just a complete mismatch, these two teams. And, you know, let's start with Northwestern's offense, which is still very pedestrian. It might be slightly improved from last year. We know Ohio State's had some defensive issues this year. Most of that has been defending the pass. There's just not a lot of threat in that area from this Northwestern offense. I can't see them scoring much in this game. And then Ohio State's offense, while Northwestern is very good statistically on defense, certain areas concern me. One is that Northwestern gets very little pressure on opposing quarterbacks. They still do a good job of somehow forcing turnovers, but they don't get much pressure. They don't get a lot of sacks. And if you're going to let Justin Fields have plenty of time, his receivers are just so much better than the guys who are trying to cover them. I can't imagine that he isn't going to hit a lot of big plays. And of course, the other thing, if you watch that Northwestern loss to Michigan State, Rocky Lombardi, the Michigan State quarterback, was giving them fits with his ability to run. Justin Fields is so much better of a runner than Lombardi. So I think the combination of those things just leads me to believe that Northwestern, while they might get more stops than most teams do against Ohio State, I still have a hard time seeing them keep the Buckeyes under 35. I think that they score plenty in order to be able to win this game by three touchdowns.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So, and they'll need some style points perhaps with the committee. I know they'll get the conference title game, which matters so much to the committee in years past. And they're there in the top four to begin with, but it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds.
Doug, I don't think the style points in the way that we usually talk of them are as important as far as like winning by, 20 points or more. But I think a narrow win where Ohio State's holding on for dear life in the final minute, given the few number of games they've played, that could be something that would make some people in the selection committee second guess what they've thought of them all season. I still think they're in with a win. But, yeah, they just have to avoid this being a game that comes down to the wire.
One more game I want to get your opinion on before I let you go. Coastal Carolina, how do you feel they respond here? Short number with Louisiana Lafayette, a team that already beat Iowa State earlier in the year in Ames.
Yeah, and Coastal's at home here, so not a neutral site conference championship game, and I think that matters. Coastal went to Lafayette and won earlier in the season, giving the Cajuns their only loss so far.
3-point win.
Yeah, and I just – look down the schedule, and I realize Coastal had a close call last week against Troy, pulled that one out of the fire, but that was coming off a highly emotional win and a game that was just thrown together at the last minute the previous week. So I give them a pass for that. But if you look at ULL, man, they have had a lot of close games this season. I just don't think that they're at the same level. The committee disagrees apparently because they don't rank them that far behind Coastal. But I think Coastal is clearly the better team. Our metrics expect the game to be about what the point spread says, that, that it's less than a touchdown difference between the two. And maybe it is, but to me, I think Coastal is clearly the better team. And with them being at home, I like them to win this game by a touchdown or more.
And the line's 3.5 or 4. All right. Good stuff as always, my man. I know I lean on you a lot during the season. I miss our radio days, but it is fascinating. Starting with the Heisman, I mean, we're used to like a -600 favorite or something this week and needing like a significant upset in a conference title game for it to be a close race, or voting not to be predetermined, at least in our eyes. But to have this kind of uncertainty is kind of refreshing and makes it fun and makes me want to discuss it with you and pick your big brain. So, Brad, appreciate the insight as always, my man.
You got it, man. Talk to you soon.
All right, take care.
Pay that man his money.
All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Behind the Bets podcast. Thanks to Matt, thanks to Brad, and thanks to Chuck Edel as well. Always appreciate their time fitting me in the morning. Football season super busy. Matt even alluded that he's writing a bunch of content for the bowl season, which is underway this weekend as well. Hey, it's a strange and unique season. Yesterday was the UFC podcast, so go check that out. It's the final UFC card of 2020. And then tomorrow we'll get back with the NFL. Our guest analysts have done great. Damian Woody and Mike Tannenbaum have both had some amazing insight into some teams and kind of picked some winners too. I mean, let's face it, we didn't ask them to pick the spread, but they gave us what they think would happen, which certainly matched with the side and with the points and things like that. So thanks to everyone. And Christina, thank you for the microphone and for congratulating me. I appreciate it all. And we're ready to rock a new era here on the Behind the Bets podcast. So we'll catch you back here tomorrow.